week in our discussion of chapter 4, we have heard the questions of Prickett Maharaj to Srila Sukadeva Goswami. And as a humble Vaishnava, before beginning speaking, Srila Sukadeva Goswami has offered his obeisances to the Supreme Lord because he knows the questions are so difficult that only if Krishna empowers his words can he speak on such topics. This is the nature of the Absolute Truth in the even the relative or material truth. The material world is so complicated. No one can actually understand the creation by Lord Brahma. What to speak of the creation on which the creation of Lord Brahma is based, because Lord Brahma's creation is called Visarga, or the secondary creation. And the creation of the elements that Lord Brahma creates from is called the Sarga. And the Sarga creation, the creation of the elements, is done by Krishna through his expansions. In the Bhagavad Gita, it describes in the 15th chapter how the banyan tree of the material world is so complex. No one can tell where it begins. No one can tell where it ends. Rather than spending all our time trying to understand matter, this material world, which is ultimately beyond our power to understand anyway, the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, in that chapter, Krishna recommends that we get out of the material world. And that should be the focus of the attention of every living entity, how to get out. How we are in the material world, so how to use this facility of the material world in the material energy to free ourselves from the material energy. This is the worthwhile adventure of life. So Sukadeva Goswami, knowing, first of all, he's a humble Vaishnava, and every act a humble Vaishnava does is done with full dependence upon Krishna, and especially when being asked to describe the creation of the world, how Krishna is interacting with the material energy to create and maintain and destroy the material world, Sukadeva Goswami begins, before he speaks about the specific subject, he begins by glorifying the Supreme Lord, offering his obeisances to him, explaining the very nature of the power, the potency of the Lord. And the Lord is so potent that one is removed, or sins are destroyed. One is freed from sins. Just by yet smaranam, by remembering the Lord, by kirtanam, by chanting his glories, and by glorifying him and serving him, by having his darshan, ikshanam, by seeing him, the heart is purified. So he's so powerful that regardless, he's the one reciprocating, he's the one giving everyone, awarding everyone their desires within the material world. Isn't it interesting how there are so many different religions of the world, and they're all the proponents of the religions. They're all convinced that their religion is the religion. Why? It means that they are getting some experience from the practices they are performing. They are getting something in return. Otherwise, how would they be so convinced? So is it everyone is imagining things? Or there is someone who is awarding according to the desires of the worshipper, there is someone awarding an experience. Someone goes to the Lord, please Lord, I have these debts. So he goes to a temple, he goes to a church, He goes to a mosque. And in the debts, somehow or another, he walks out of the church or temple or mosque and trips over a bag. And in the bag, he opens it up and there's $500 and he removes his debt. And then immediately, he thinks, ah, God is so great. He's so wonderful. And truly, God is wonderful. Even in that reciprocation, jana sukritino arjuna, because one who calls upon the Lord to get his $500, he is a sukritina, he's a pious person. Artha gigyasaratati, he is looking for wealth and he has gone to the Lord, so he is wonderful. He is a great soul. But this is not the limit of how the Lord can reciprocate. Someone may think, of course he can reciprocate with more than $500. He can give us $1,000 or $2,000 or $100 million. But what he can really give, that one only can understand through Krishna consciousness. He can really give what? Himself. Because the devotees who love him with their full hearts, with such intimacy, their love for Krishna is so powerful that Krishna cannot reciprocate with them properly. He feels unable to reciprocate with them because he is bahunishta and they are ekanishta. He has so many devotees and he has to give this one, this one, this one, this one. So he has many branched in his devotion, in his reciprocation, but they are focused only on him. So how can Krishna, who takes care of so many devotees, how can he reciprocate? So he actually admits his defeat before the devotees of Braja and says, you have to be satisfied. I cannot reciprocate. I promised yayatamam papadyante, but I cannot meet my word. I cannot reciprocate with the quality of your love. So you please be satisfied with that. And in this way, the devotees defeat Krishna. This is most wonderful. They exhaust his supply of items that he can reciprocate with them. They take everything from him. And in this way, they ultimately completely control Krishna. The supreme controller becomes controlled by his devotees. This is what Sukadeva is really explaining this. He's so powerful. The Lord is so powerful. He reciprocates with everyone according to their desires and their mentality as they come to him. He's so powerful that Kirata Hunanda, that regardless, Hunandra, Pulinda, Pulkasa, all persons, regardless of the quality of their birth, they can be purified just by the blessings and mercy of his devotee. He's so powerful. And if one has no pretension when coming to him, what is the limit of what one can get? That will be described ultimately in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. So Sukadeva Goswami himself is an unpretentious devotee. He does not want anything from the Lord. His desire is simply to please him. That is bhakti. He is fully surrendered with great devotion. His mind is always focused on Krishna. He needs, practically speaking, nothing within the material world. He is living as a soul, although within the material world and within a material body, he is living as a soul on the spiritual level, such an exalted personality. So he, with his unpretentious worship, what is his realization about Krishna? So he expresses some of that in the 20th verse, which is a very sweet verse and also very famous. Shriyapati Yajnapati Prajapati Diyampati Lokapati Darapati Patir Gatis Chandaka Vishni Satpatam Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satampati. May Lord Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord of all devotees, the protector and the glory of all the kings like the Andaka and Vrishni of the Yadu dynasty, the husband of the goddess of fortune, the director of all sacrifices and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of the intelligence, the Sanskrit term there is Diyampati, which means the pati means the protector or the controller, and diam means of one's intelligence or one's knowledge. So in this way, he is Diyampati, the awarder, the benedictor of knowledge, the controller of all intelligence, Diyampati, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material. What a incredibly powerful person. The Lord, the worshipable Lord of all devotees. The protector and the glory of the kings. Because the kings are the protectors of the citizens. And they are, and the Lord is the protector of the protectors. Especially of the Yadu dynasty, in which the Lord took his birth. He especially protected the Yadu dynasty. So this really directly points to Krishna, because he is Jarupati. He is the Lord and the protector of the Yadu dynasty. Vishni Satvatam, Andaka Vishni Satvatam. They are the Satvata dynasties, the dynasties of devotees. He is the husband of the goddess of fortune. This means that fortune, which is very chanchal, means fortune, once fortune is flickering, it comes and it goes. No one in the material world can avoid this. There's always ups and downs, there's cycles of victory and cycles of defeats, valleys, heights of victories and valleys of defeats. No one's life is fully steady, because the goddess of fortune does not stay with anyone continuously, so therefore she is known as chanchala, flickering, always moving. But she is dedicated to serving the lotus feet of Krishna, and she loses, by her service to Krishna, she loses her fickleness, her chanchala nature of going from one to the other to the other. And Krishna is served by not only one goddess of fortune, but Lakshmi Sahastra Satyata Sambhav Sevyamano, that by served by thousands, hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. So how fortunate is Krishna? He is served by fortune herself. So how fortunate is Krishna? And he is the director, Jagyapati, the director of all sacrifices. When someone is performing a sacrifice, it is to please him. And therefore, because everyone is trying to please him and following his direction, therefore he is the leader of all living entities. Again, the Dhyampati, the controller of intelligence, the awarder of knowledge, the proprietor of all planets. Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Loka Mahishvaram. All planets in the material world and the spiritual world, it is he who is the proprietor and the supreme incarnation on the earth. And Sukadeva says, please may Lord Sri Krishna be merciful unto me. And towards the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord of the universe, out of his causeless mercy upon the conditioned souls, descends by his own energy, Atma Mayam. That also means by his own mercy he comes to this world. Sambhavat Yapma Mayaya. He comes to reestablish the eternal relation of the conditioned souls with him. He instructs all to surrender unto him instead of falsely claiming to be enjoyers for a certain limit under his control. We tend to cut off a piece of the universe and say, this is mine for my pleasure. When he so descends, he proves how much greater is his ability to enjoy. He's the supreme enjoyer, the bhoktaram, the bhokta, the enjoyer. And he exhibits his power of enjoyment by, for instance, marrying 16,000 wives at once. The conditioned soul is very proud of becoming the husband of even one wife. But the Lord laughs at this. The intelligent man can know who is the real husband. Factually, the Lord is the husband of all the women in his creation. But a conditioned soul under the control of the Lord feels proud to be the husband of one or two wives. All these qualifications as the different types of pati. Pati means, again, the protector or the husband. Mentioned in this verse are meant for Lord Sri Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami has therefore especially mentioned the pati and the gati of the Yadu dynasty. Gati means the goal. That could only be Krishna. The members of the Yadu dynasty knew that Lord Sri Krishna is everything. And all of them intended to return to Lord Krishna after he had finished his transcendental pastimes on the earth. The Yadu dynasty was annihilated by the will of the Lord because its members had to return home with the Lord. The annihilation of the Yadu dynasty was a material show created by the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, the Lord and the members of the Yadu dynasty are all eternal associates. The Lord is therefore the guide of all devotees. And as such, Sukadev Goswami offered him due respect with love-laden feelings. So knowing that the Lord is Dhyampati, especially, he is the benedictor and giver of transcendental knowledge, Srila Sridhar Swami in his commentary says that the next two verses, 21 and 22, of Sukadev's words after remembering the Lord's attribute as Dhyampati, the awarder of knowledge. So he is the Lord and the protector, the giver of knowledge, and the Lord and protector of his devotees. So he is the awarder of knowledge to his devotees. What is the process that the devotees get knowledge of him? So in the next verse, in text 21, and we'll read the entire purport of this too. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, who gives liberation. How? By thinking of his lotus feet at every second, following in the footsteps of authorities, not whimsically. The devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. And contrasting this, the learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims, and they don't understand the Lord. But the devotees, they're always thinking about him, and therefore they fully understand him. May the Lord, Sukadeva Goswami says, be pleased with me. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. The mystic yogis, after a strenuous effort to control the senses, may be situated in a trance of yoga just to have a vision of the Supersoul within everyone. But the pure devotee, simply by remembering the Lord's lotus feet at every second, that is the desire of the devotee. This is the process for the devotee. Simply remembering the Lord's lotus feet at every second, he at once becomes established in real trance, because by such realization his mind and intelligence are completely cleansed of the disease of material enjoyment. The pure devotee thinks himself fallen into the ocean of birth and death, and incessantly prays to the Lord to lift him up. He only aspires to become a speck of transcendental dust at the lotus feet of the Lord. The pure devotee, by the grace of the Lord, absolutely loses all attraction for material enjoyment. And to keep free from contamination, he always thinks of the Lord's lotus, the lotus feet of the Lord. King Kulashekar, a great devotee of the Lord, prayed, Krishna tadiya parapankaja pandarantam adyaivame vijatu manasa rajahansa prana prayana samaye kapavatta pitae kanta varodana vedos maranam gutaste. My Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stems of the lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? There is an intimate relationship between the swan and the lotus stem. So the comparison is very appropriate. Without becoming a swan, a paramhansa, one cannot enter into the network of the lotus feet of the Lord. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, the mental speculators, even by dint of learned scholarship, cannot even dream of the absolute truth by speculating over it for eternity. The Lord reserves the right of not being exposed to such mental speculators. And because they cannot enter into the network stem of the lotus feet of the Lord, all mental speculators differ in conclusions. And at the end, they make a useless compromise by saying, as many conclusions, as many ways, according to one's own inclination. Yatarucham. But the Lord is not like a shopkeeper trying to please all sorts of customers in the mental speculator exchange. The Lord is what He is, the Absolute Personality of Godhead, and He demands absolute surrender unto Him only. The pure devotee, however, by following the ways of previous acharyas or authorities, can see the Supreme Lord through the transparent medium of a bona fide spiritual master, anupashyanti. The pure devotee never tries to see the Lord by mental speculation, but by following in the footsteps of the acharyas, mahajano yinagata sapanta. Therefore, there is no difference of conclusion amongst the Vaishnava acharyas regarding the Lord and the devotees. Lord Chaitanya asserts that the living entity, Jiva, is eternally the servitor of the Lord, and that he is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. This tata of Lord Chaitanya is shared by all four sampradayas of the Vaishnava school, all accepting eternal servitude to the Lord even after salvation. And there is no authorized Vaishnava acharya who may think of the Lord and himself as one. The humbleness of the pure devotee who is 100% engaged in his service puts the devotee of the Lord in a trance by which to realize everything, because to the sincere devotee of the Lord reveals himself as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10.10. The Lord, being the Lord of intelligence in everyone, even in the non-devotees, favors his devotees with proper intelligence so that automatically the pure devotee is enlightened with the factual truth about the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is revealed not by one's speculating power or by one's verbal jugglery over the absolute truth. Rather, he reveals himself to a devotee when he, the Lord, is fully satisfied by the devotee's service attitude. Sukadev Goswami is not a mental speculator or compromiser of the theory of as many ways, as many conclusions. Rather, he prays to the Lord only, invoking his transcendental pleasure. That is the way of knowing the Lord. So Sukadev has been asked by Maharaj Prickett to describe the process by which the Lord interacts with the material energy, and he does not think himself powerful independently of the Lord, and thus he prays to the Lord for the power to properly answer the question of Sukadev, of Maharaj Prickett, and thus to describe him. So we'll read 22 and 23 and then a bit of the purport of 23. So Sukadev Goswami continues now, starting to point, because he's getting ready to speak, so he begins pointing towards the specific questions that he's been asked. May the Lord, who in the beginning of the creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, of Krishna's own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, may he be pleased with me. He's asking specifically for that Lord who empowered Brahma, because we're going to hear about Brahma very soon. Please be pleased with him. May the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, and who in his Purusha incarnation causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of material modes, which are his generator, be pleased to decorate my statements. So in these two statements, Sukadev is asking the Lord, who gave knowledge, who amplified or gave knowledge within Brahma's heart and inspired him, because Brahma, as we'll hear in the ninth chapter of this canto, we'll hear how Brahma did not know how to create, but Krishna initiated him from within the heart directly and inspired him with the knowledge of how to create. May that Lord, who inspired Brahma not only with the power of creation, but knowledge of his own self, of Krishna, we hear about that in the ninth chapter too, and who appeared nonetheless to come from the mouth of Brahma, may that Lord be pleased with me. This is what he says. And then Sukadev says, also talking to the Paramatma, praying to Lord Paramatma, may the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, by his lying down in the universe as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, as the Paramatma of the universe, he is doing everything. And by his lying down in the material creation as Karanadakshay Vishnu, as Mahavishnu, he is the Paramatma of the entirety of existence, material existence. And as entering the hearts of all living entities, he is the Paramatma, the Supreme Soul, the soul of the souls, the soul of our soul, as the Super Soul is Savasya Chaham Ride Sanavista, within everyone's heart. So him, in his Purusha incarnation, he causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of material modes, which are his, the living being's generator. So there's the five Bhumirupo Nalo Vayu. There's the five gross elements, earth, water, air, fire, and ether. And then there are the five active senses, and five knowledge acquiring senses, and the mind. So that's the 16 sodasa, the 16 elements that the Lord enlivens to act as a covering, practically speaking. And so the living entity can create his material body. So he generates that. And he generates, thus, then the living entity is moved around by this body. So may that Lord who does these acts of creation, Sukadev Goswami says, be pleased to decorate my statements. May he make my words true and sweet and accurate. So Prabhupada says in the purport to 23, As a fully dependent devotee, Sukadeva Goswami, unlike a mundane man who is proud of his own capability, he invokes the pleasure of the personality of Godhead so that his statements may be successful and be appreciated by the hearers. The devotee always thinks of himself as an instrument for instrumental for anything successfully carried out. In other words, he doesn't think that he is the doer. He is just an instrument when something is successfully carried out. And the devotee, he declines to take credit for anything done by himself. This is the mood of a devotee. Kattaham iti manyate ahankarava mudabma. He doesn't think he's the doer. He sees that Krishna is doing it. This is his pleasure, being an instrument of Krishna. This is his only desire, to serve as Krishna's instrument as smoothly as an expert carpenter uses his tools, is able to use his tools. There's practically no difference between the carpenter's use of his tools and the use of his hands. He's so expert in using them. So similarly, the devotee wants to be instrumental in the same way. And therefore, the Lord can use him. And when he succeeds in doing something, he never thinks it is he himself who's doing it. And this is what Sukadeva Goswami is saying. That may the Lord decorate my statements. May He use me as His instrument to answer the questions of Maharaj Prakrit. And in this way, if I'm used by Krishna, then my activity, my speaking will be perfect. He declines to take credit for anything done by himself. The godless atheist wants to take all credit for activities, not knowing that even a blade of grass cannot move without the sanction of the Supreme Spirit, the personality of Godhead. Sukadeva Goswami therefore wants to move by the direction of the Supreme Lord who inspired Brahma to speak the Vedic wisdom. Now in text 24, Sukadev begs for the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva, who was the one who taught him the Bhagavatam, as we heard in the fourth chapter of the first canto. After Srila Vyasadeva hearing from Narada Muni, then he had a revelation by his bhakti yogena manasi. By his focused meditation on bhakti, he had a full revelation of the Absolute Truth. And then, after understanding the Absolute Truth, he compiled the Bhagavatam, Anato Upasamam Shakshat Bhakti Yoga Arhokchaje. He compiled the Bhagavatam, and then he spoke it to Sukadeva Goswami, who was already a self-satisfied Atmarama, but yet he wanted to hear more, learn more about Krishna. So now Sukadev offers his obeisances to Srila Vyasadeva in praise for his mercy. Namastasmai Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vedase Papur Gyanam Mayam Somya Yan Mukam Buruhasavan. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Vasudeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures. The pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In pursuance of the specific utterance, Vedase, or the compiler of the system of transcendental knowledge, this saying, Srila Vyasadeva is compiled Vedic knowledge, Srila Sridhar Swami has commented that the respectful obeisances are offered to Srila Vyasadeva, who is an incarnation of Vasudeva. Srila Jiva Goswami has agreed to this. But Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has made a further advance, namely, that the nectar from the mouth of Lord Krishna is transferred to his different consorts, and thus they learn the finer arts of music, dancing, dressing, decorations, and all such things which are relished by the Lord. Such music, dance, and decorations enjoyed by the Lord are certainly not anything mundane, because the Lord is addressed in the very beginning as para, or transcendental. This transcendental knowledge is unknown to the forgotten conditioned souls. Srila Vyasadeva, who is the incarnation of the Lord, thus compiled the Vedic literatures to revive the lost memory of the conditioned souls about their eternal relation with the Lord. One should therefore try to understand the Vedic scriptures, or the nectar transferred by the Lord to his consorts in the conjugal yuma, from the lotus mouth of Vyasadeva or Shukadeva. By gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of the transcendental arts of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his Rasalila. But without having the Vedic knowledge, one can hardly understand the transcendental nature of the Lord's rasa, dance, and music. The pure devotees of the Lord, however, can equally relish the nectar in the form of the profound philosophical discourses and in the form of kissing by the Lord in the rasa dance, as there is no mundane distinction between the two. Because the devotees see all as the mercy and the reciprocation of the Lord, his kindness, his sweetness. So after asking, begging, Sukadeva, begging for the mercy of Srila Vyasadeva, because he's describing the words of Vyasadeva, how they are relished as the devotees, the pure devotees, drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. What an image. The words of Srila Vyasadeva are compared to what? To nectarian, just like nectar, or amrita, or honey, well, coming from the lotus. So the lotus-like mouth of Srila Vyasadeva is emanating this wonderful nectar of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the devotees are so eager to drink this. So after offering his obeisances and glorifying Srila Vyasadeva and begging for the blessings of Srila Vyasadeva so he can properly answer this question, he is preparing to speak. My dear king, Brahma, the firstborn, on being questioned by Narad, exactly apprised him on this subject as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his birth. So he's saying that this question that you have asked me as to how this world, universe is created, I will now repeat to you how Narada Muni, who is the spiritual master of my father, my spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva, how he asked similar questions to Lord Brahma, who directly heard, who directly understood everything from the Lord. And I will now tell you what I have heard from my father, who has heard this from Narada, who has heard this from Brahma, who has heard this directly from the Lord. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Just at the end, rather. Sukadeva Goswami therefore prayed for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message that was spoken directly by the Lord to Brahma, or what was directly spoken by Brahma to Narad. Therefore, the statements of creation explained by Sukadeva Goswami are not at all, as the mundanists suggest, theoretical, but are perfectly correct. One who hears these messages and tries to assimilate them gets perfect information of the material creation. So that ends the fourth chapter, and the fifth and sixth chapter will describe something about the material creation. And in the next class, which will be on Tuesday, will hear about the dealings between Narada and Brahma, how Narada asked questions to Brahma on this. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Any questions or comments?
In verse 22, with regard to Lord Kamalya, Shukadev says that Lord appeared to be generated from the mouth of criminals, that Lord is the bailiff.
That
the Lord is the bailiff?
Actually, I'm not sure about that. I can't answer that. I'm unable. Knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated, appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma. May he be pleased with me. It's talking about the Lord, it seems, but it doesn't give any reference, and I'm not aware of any to exactly what it is.
How is generated from his mouth?
Huh?
How the Lord
That's the question.
From his mouth? So it is only the Vedas, which is the known knowledge available to mankind, that through Vedas, he inspired him, and then the Vedas were spoken by Brahma, by inspiration.
But we know even that the Lord, not only he came out of Brahma's nose one time as Lord Varaha. Well, to speak of his mouth.
Yes.
And as Lord Shiva. So that's a reasonable explanation, which is the basic one that you said. But I'm not 100% sure. Anyone else have any other references on that? Yeah.
Called
Apurusha
or not
entitled
by any
created being. Right. But I was reading that. Could mean originally. If that interpretation is correct, then he appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma would be appropriate. It's not actually coming from the mouth of Brahma, but it's appearing to be. But if that's correct, it could be, because the purport seems to go in that direction, but it's not directly stated in that way.
Yeah. By assumption, maybe.
Any other questions? Yeah.
Sometimes.
Well, you're not the only one.
Okay, you were saying that in the beginning we're supposed to want to get out of the material world, but then on the other hand it says that we're not supposed to desire liberation. What is the difference between the confusedness?
This is just a general question, right? Mm-hmm. Having nothing to do with this class, right?
Just what you were saying in the beginning about how we're supposed to want to get out.
Oh, yeah. We should want to get out of the material world. Because there's a few ways to understand this. One is that at this point, if we say, I don't desire liberation, I just want to stay in the material world, it won't be to serve Krishna. That's a very high platform. When Mahaprabhu says, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitam Va, this is already on the platform of liberation, basically. Because this is after one is humble and is chanting the holy names continuously, Trinadapisani Chainan, Nadanam Najanam the Sundarim. So one is already fixed, fully fixed at that point in desiring nothing in the material world. So when we are before that stage, when our consciousness is yet to be fully focused on Krishna, we should very much be desiring to get out of the material world. Because if we are not desiring to get out of the material world, we'll be desiring to enjoy within the material world. But on the higher stage, the devotee doesn't, that is not his desire to get out of the material world. His desire is to serve Krishna. He has no other desire other than to please Krishna. And if Krishna wants him in the material world, he'll stay in the material world and serve there. And if Krishna wants him in Goloka Vrindavan, he'll go to Goloka Vrindavan and serve there. But the trick in this statement is a devotee who is thinking like that, actually, he is already out of the material world. The constant thought of serving Krishna as one's only desire means that we are not in the material world at all. But that's before one is liberated. One should want to get out of the material world. One time after a lecture in Japan, Prabhupada said something about wanting, you know, that we should want to go to back to Godhead or something. So I, in my naivete, said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, we don't want to go back to Godhead. We just want to stay here and serve you. And Prabhupada looked at me and said, don't make me stay here to accept your service. He said it more sweetly than that, but that's what he said. In other words, there won't be any feeling of loss of a servant of Prabhupada if we go to Goloka Vrindavan and serve him in that way there. So, first point is that for one in the material world, he should desire to get out of the material world, but not to get out of the material world to serve Krishna. One should desire to go back to Godhead. Second point is when one is very advanced, then one will not desire to, his desire won't be to get liberated or free from the material world, his only desire will be to serve Krishna. And that type of desire, if focused and steady for Krishna's pleasure, serving Krishna, means that we're already out of the material world, actually. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Prabhupada refers to Shuddhishna Chalavati Thakur's understanding of this way. Namaste Bhagavate, Deva Vedasa.
Yeah.
24.
Yes.
Is it correct to understand that Shuddhishna Chalavati Thakur is suggesting that Sukadeva Swami is praying direct to Krishna rather than to Vyasadeva? As in terms of his relationship with God.
Yeah. Of course, in Prabhupada has translated it in the Vasudevaya unto Vasudev or his incarnation. Mm-hmm. His incarnation is Vedavyas. So the idea is that obeisances unto him, the Lord, from whose mouth come his whose lotus like mouth comes nectar. So there's these two meanings given by great acharyas.
Isn't it referred about Jiva Goswami and Krishna Chakravarti, two different?
And Sridhar Swami. Srila Sridhar Swami and Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami confirms what Srila Sridhar Swami says, but one has to get used to this when one reads Shastra, that the Acharyas sometimes have differing opinions, but they are not different. They're just different ways of looking at the same absolute truth. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he, especially in his commentary on the 10th canto, he makes many advances in this way and tells things that before that time, before he revealed them, had never before been revealed. So he tells at times the most intimate understanding of how the verses can be understood. So this is the glory of the Bhagavatam, or a glory of the Bhagavatam, that it can be understood on so many different levels. So it is so deep. And the levels don't contradict each other, but they enhance each other. Even understanding, it is Srila Vyasadeva, understanding the pure devotees drink up the nectarian transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus mouth of the Lord. So what is the ultimate transcendental knowledge dropping from the Lord's mouth? What is the highest knowledge that he reveals in the Bhagavatam? And that is also has to do with the dancing of the residents of Vrindavan, etc. like that. Any other questions or comments?
Guruji Prabhu, one part of the class you mentioned that pure devotee would know or see that he's not doing anything.
Mm.
That would it be understood that he would also see that any activity done by every other living entity is also a way to see Krishna's activity?
Yeah, he sees Krishna in everything. But he sees that the other living entities in the material world are not directly under Krishna's control. Krishna is like the puppet master. And who is pulling the strings on the puppets is the three modes of material nature. So he sees all living entities are also serving Krishna and under Krishna's control, but they're indirectly. And because of the fact that it's indirect, they have to suffer birth and death, and old age and disease and so much envy torturing them.
And is that why he doesn't get angry at people?
He knows that without Krishna's sanction it couldn't be going on. So he sees his Krishna as Sarvakarana Karanam, the ultimate cause, even though it may not be Krishna's desire that this happen. So what he tries to do is interfere, because Krishna is dealing with the living entities in a neutral fashion, just reciprocating with their desires, and he interferes with that and tries to change their desires by his powerful association. He tries to change their desires so they desire something other than sense gratification, that they desire service to him, to the Lord. And by his intervention, he can upset the activities of the modes, turn them over so that the souls can be directly under Krishna's service. And practically speaking, without the intervention, intercession of a devotee, powerful devotee, no one can get out. Everyone is just blindly walking around with their eyes closed, thinking that everything is fine, thinking that this is reality, but their eyes are tightly screwed closed. So therefore we daily say Vanshakalpatubhyascha Kripasindhumevacha, offer obeisances to the devotees of all kind. This means the Madhyama devotees too, the middle class, not only the Uttama devotees, but all devotees.
And because he's so close to Krishna and he saved his soul at mercy on some other person, Krishna fulfills that?
I'm sorry, could you say that
because
again?
Because he's so close to Krishna, the pure devotee.
Yeah.
And as he...
He's close to Krishna. He's the one acting as the pen in the hand of Krishna. Mm-hmm. So when we say that the pure devotee, that kind of a devotee, even the Madhyam devotee, he's interceding. It's actually Krishna interceding through him, but he uses his Madhyam devotees in this way. This is because they carry his Kripa Shakti, the power of his mercy. Yeah. Yep.
You might have answered it. When you were talking before about how everything is Krishna's arrangement, and you see good and bad, that what Harvey was saying is under Krishna's control.
That's a very advanced stage to actually see like that, so steadily and consistently.
Yeah, I just wonder whether it may lead to impersonalism. You know, if we see everything is under Krishna's control, that you might not at all want to intervene, even or be part of.
It shouldn't be
imitating Krishna's plan as well, basically.
Well, no, we know that Krishna wants us to intervene. He wants everyone to do this work. Parupakar. Was that what you were asking? How do we know?
It's whether if you see a situation, a bad situation, and you think, okay, it's Krishna's arrangement, but as a devotee, we're personal and we like to act in a personal way, so how do we put that into action as well, at the same time seeing that Krishna's actually arranged for the situation to happen?
Well, it could be Krishna arranged a miserable situation so that someone comes to their senses and comes to devotional service, and Krishna wants you to stick your hand in there and something like that. It certainly could be like that. So either we have the vision or we follow someone else's vision who has the vision in general. And if we're in a situation where we don't know what to do, whether we should intercede or not, we don't know what Krishna wants, we pray, beg Krishna for the intelligence, or for the instruction, to dami buddhi olam tam, and then try our best. We have to act or not act. You know, and we try our best to understand what Krishna's desire is and trust that if we're trying our best, Krishna will help. Does that answer your question? Or? Now I understood what you meant by personalist, meaning that you're a person and you.
Because there's a tendency sometimes for people to just not want to get involved, and I wonder if that's because they don't want to, because they think Krishna doesn't want them to get involved.
Well, what do you think it usually is?
I haven't really thought about it, and it just came off the top of my head.
Yeah. Well, usually conditioned souls in this world are more concerned about what they want than what Krishna wants. That's their motivating factor. So when our desires and Krishna's desires happen to coincide, everything is nice. But when Krishna's desire, like with Arjuna, he wanted Arjuna to fight, and Arjuna didn't want to fight. And there was, so what did Arjuna do? He gave up his own desires and placed himself as an instrument of Krishna.
So there can be a struggle to get to that point.
Well, I don't know if can is the right word, but for a conditioned soul who tends to be selfish and identify with the mind and body, it seems that it's a quite frequent occurrence. It's hard to be a fully surrendered soul. But without the desire, it will never happen. Practically, we're in the material world because of our desires. And if we change our desires, we'll change our situation. So it starts with desiring, even though we're incapable, maybe.
Then on ordinary level, we cannot say that if I haven't helped such and such, it is Krishna's desire. On a transcendental level, everything happening is due to his desire, of course. But on our level, we rush, you know, when our interest is involved. And we pull back when, you know, our interest is not involved. But that's not due to Krishna's desire. That's our level of consciousness yet.
Like if we're driving our car and we bang into Bunky's car, and then we say, oh, it must be Krishna's mercy because, and therefore, Bunky should thank me. Then we will have another think coming. That time, we'll say,